Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Believe in Bears. My name is Joey Christopoulos, my co-host Corey Wooten. But first, today's episode, it's presented by who else? BetOnline.ag. BetOnline, it's back. It's better than ever because it's got a new web interface to the start of the basketball season, and it's got more props, odds, and lines than ever before because BetOnline remains the number one spot for all the basketball and football action this season. So what are you waiting for? Go on your mobile device and sign up today. Receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit when you use promo code BELEAV50, BLEAV50. Only if you use that promo code to receive that bonus. It's got all kinds of great sports, your favorite Vegas casino games. So don't wait. Take advantage of all the amazing offers available today for the 2021 season because at BetOnline, it is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for coming into the pod. We wish we brought better news for you heading into this holiday week here. But again, it is week 11. The Bears lose 16-13 to the Lamar Jackson-less Baltimore Ravens. Call it a season killer, call it a soul killer. Either way, the paramedics are on the way right now over to the crime scene, and we are going to break it down with you right now and maybe give you a preview for this Lions game because there's a quick turnaround, Bears fans. First, let's bring in my co-host, former Bears defensive end, Fox 32 Chicago's, and maybe the man who's going to be on top of the turkey this week. It's Corey Wooten. What's up, Corey?
Hey, what's going on, Joey? It was a disheartening loss, to say the least. I think, you know, especially with all the circumstances with Lamar Jackson being out and, you think, okay, we have this win. You know, we have Tyler Huntley in there at backup. Yeah, exactly. You know, somebody that, you know, we really haven't heard much about, hasn't had much experience. And I'm like, at Soldier Field, crowd noise. And we lose the game. So it's just so unfortunate. And I think the hardest part for me is just how bad the offense played when Justin Fields was in there. It was awful. You know, there was just no consistency. You know, I really think that first drive, you know, when they drove down the field and then Santos missed that field goal, it was classic Matt Nagy football, the 3rd and 5, a toss play. When Justin Fields is starting to get comfortable in there, you know, he completes a pass, you know, we're kind of mixing and matching the run and the pass. And instead of, you know, targeting a guy like we were talking about, Cole Kmet or Jimmy Graham in the red zone, you know, that's when the big dogs really come to eat, or a guy like Darnell Mooney, you know, who's his go-to guy, we do a toss play to the side and lose a bunch of yardage. And, you know, Santos misses the field goal. But I just didn't like that call. And I think that's when the momentum kind of shifted for me. I was like, man, you know, we have momentum. We're driving down the field. We're in the red zone, and we have a real opportunity to target Cole Kmet or Jimmy Graham or Darnell Mooney, and we go with one of those classic Matt Nagy toss plays on 3rd and 5. This didn't make sense to me.
What happened to RPOs, Corey? You know, yeah. What I'm saying? I mean, honestly, like, and on top of it, we previewed it on here. There's a lot of analytics and statistics out there that the Baltimore Ravens defense struggles with the tight end. I looked it up. Cole Kmet, somewhere in that second or third quarter, only had one target in the game. I mean, obviously he came up with a big catch in the fourth quarter when they were trying to drive to, you know, put them briefly ahead for that moment, which we'll get to in a second. But yeah, again, this is just what happens. Bad teams make bad plays at the wrong moments, right? And Cairo Santos, good player, makes a mistake in that wrong moment, just kind of gets us off on the wrong foot. And then it sort of slid downhill from there. I want to go back to you because, you know, you played in the game, you know, you've sacked quarterbacks in the NFL, you played for the Chicago Bears. Go back to your playing days. Was there ever a moment when you woke up, or maybe on a Saturday night, you realize X starting quarterback isn't playing, and Y backup quarterback isn't playing? And what kind of emotions will go through your mind when, if you heard Tyler Huntley was going to be under center? And the D-line, we're going to get to it. Front 7 looked pretty good. We had different execution issues, but I mean, you know, in your opinion, what kind of happened there? I mean, they had to be excited to get after this guy.
Oh, I think they were really excited, especially, you know, when you have a former MVP and Lamar Jackson not suiting up. You have Tyler Huntley, like a guy that really hasn't proven himself in the league. So I think they were excited. They knew that he could run the football. Obviously, everyone kind of knew that, the athlete that he is. But, you know, he's not the player Lamar Jackson is. So I think they were excited. They were, you know, chomping at the bit to get out there and get after him. But, you know, in my experience, the one time that we had a backup was, you know, I think I've told you a story when we played San Francisco in 2012, right? Alex Smith was the quarterback. He had got hurt.
Kaepernick.
And in comes Colin Kaepernick, right? And we're like, oh, I played against a dude in college for Nevada. I was like, you know, he's decent. You know, he can run the football. He can pass a little bit. But, hey, you know, Alex Smith was doing his thing. And we're like, oh, we got Colin Kaepernick, man. We're excited. But Ryan Marinelli was nervous because he's like, man, this guy can run. This guy can do it all. Like, you know, we really have to be on our P's and Q's. Like, we got to have everything. And they completely stomped us out. If you remember that game, we played a Candlestick and they stomped us out. Like Frank Gore went off on us. Colin Kaepernick went off. Vernon Davis. It was like Alden Smith, I think, had 4.5 sacks on Gabe Kareemi. It was a nightmare that game. And you normally don't think that. You're like, oh, the backup, he's going to be a little nervous. He's going to come in there. He may do okay, but he's not going to light it up like Kaepernick. And then that's when Colin Kaepernick became Colin Kaepernick. The rest of the season, he's flexing on him and everything like that. But, yeah, it's not the same thing because Huntley, you know, wasn't the same type of player as Colin Kaepernick. But I think they were all excited. You know, Robert Quinn and company were excited to get after him. And, you know, speaking of Robert Quinn, I mean, double digits already, 10 sacks this season. So, you remember I called it. I said he's going to have a bounce back season and, you know, didn't have Khalil Mack out there. But It's just really impressive to see him. It really looks like that 2013 season when he had 19 sacks. He has a different level of burst, and it's great to see because I think this is his 11th year in the league. So it's usually, you know, as the defensive ends, they start to decline with their speed, their burst, their get off. But he looks identical to what he was in 2013. So whatever he's doing in the offseason, whatever he did in this offseason, continue it, you know, and continue working because – you know, it looked like after last year that he wasn't going to be able to play out his Bears contract, but it just seems like he's getting better. So if he can continue to do this, he can play out this contract and hopefully have many more double-digit sack seasons for the Bears.
And real quick, let's just stay with the D-line because it's one of the lone bright spots of this game, in my opinion. You know, just what's your takeaway from Gibson? I thought he was in the backfield pretty often. And it looks like Eddie Goldman was in the backfield pretty often too as well. They had a really nice day.
Exactly. I love seeing Gibson out there because he's a young guy that's getting a lot of reps, especially with Khalil Mack being out. And I kind of talked about him on the post game for Fox. I was like, I love what he's doing out there. He's active. You know, he's burst to the ball. He's using moves, second and third moves. That's what I love from him now. You know, in the beginning of the season, I saw him, you know, kind of make a move and get stuck on a block. You know, if he didn't win at first, it was like he wasn't going to get close, but now he's winning on the second and third moves. He's getting more pressures. He's getting sacks. The production is there. So it's great to see him, you know, probably learning off guys like Robert Quinn and Khalil Mack. You know, it's really those second and third moves that make you come home. It's very rare that you really come home on a first move in this league. So I love what I saw from him. Great to see Eddie Goldman out there. You know, he's kind of been up and down with injuries and whatnot. But, yeah, like you said, the front seven really, I thought, performed well. Roquan was all over the place. And, I mean, he's having an awesome year. I mean, he's really having his coming out party. I mean, sideline to sideline, all over the place. I mean, they're going to have to load the Brinks truck to Hallis Hall because he's going to get paid after this. He is.
Yeah, dude. Well, yeah, 22,000 Roquan Smith tackles aside yesterday. And, you know, Kendall Vildor did not play a great game. I want to just get your opinion on that last drive because there's two things, you know, has been a bit of a mantra is that this Bears defense, we can say Khalil Mack is out. We can say Hicks and Eddie Jackson have been out. But all season long, this Bears defense, every time this offense that has struggled all season long finally puts points on the board, we seem to just give it right back. And again, this is the third week in a row that we have done that very thing. So I just want to get your opinion on it because, in my opinion, what I kind of saw out there is I saw Cassius Marsh out there.
Yep.
You know, I saw Marquise Christian out there.
Yeah.
You know, DeAndre Houston, Carson. I mean, what was your take on that final drive? No excuses, or it was kind of felt like a little bit of a ragtag band-aid group of guys that were out there for that last moment.
So the play where I think it was it Bateman that was wide open? Who was that?
Yeah, Bateman on the bus. Yeah,
on the bus play. But on that play, right, nobody was set at all. There was a bunch of confusion. People still weren't even all the way on the field. So I didn't understand in that situation where you have your timeouts, you call a timeout.
They did it to us earlier, too, where we were having a hard time getting on and off the field all day, and they actually snapped it and got it straight to Bateman. And they were like, they're supposed to give you time. And they're like, no, they don't have to. And it's a bunch
But the thing is, in that situation, when your defense is all disoriented, you have to call a timeout right there. And hold on, because you know, in that situation, if you hold them to a field goal, you're still up one. So I didn't understand in that situation why they didn't call the timeout and just get everything set, because everything was moving parts. And in those situations, you got to know that you can't rotate the same way when a team is going hurry up. And I think that was the confusion. And it just seems like these little discipline issues are constantly plaguing the Bears, you know, situation like that, you know, the third and 11 where Huntley scrambles for the first down. We have a great blitz off the edge and we have no contain on the right side. So it all works together, and it's nothing new. You know, this is the same stuff we've been talking about, you know, the penalties, you know, not being gap disciplined, not having contain. That's why the Bears cannot win games. You know, in that situation, that play should have never happened. That should have been a clear. He didn't even run. They didn't know what they were doing on that play. Miscommunication. They're running off the field. They're running on the field. It's just like it's kind of embarrassing, honestly, to be honest, because you see the same thing every week. And as a pro team, you know, especially a team like the Chicago Bears, it just with defense is key. We just haven't seen that consistency. And it's really all mental. That's all it is mental. You know, it's not like they're out there getting smoked, this, that, and the other. Situations like that, that's just a mental thing, and you cannot have those busts.
As terrible as this season has unfolded over the last couple of weeks, we've lost five in a row. We've held a fourth quarter lead in the last 3 weeks. In theory, we could be 6-4. So I'm right there with you. And the troubling thing, and look, we've been on this for a while, but when you start to mirror what we do coaching-wise with John Harbaugh, you're just like, man, we are light years away. And ever since that Browns game, right, we've had our pen and our pad out, and we've been kind of grading Matt Nagy as these games go along. And I don't know if this is one of the worst ones, but it's pretty close, in my opinion. And I just want to kind of get into some of his coaching decisions, and let's just maybe just stick with timeouts for right now.
Yep.
The three timeouts that he burns in the second half. The first one, it's third and one. Andy Dalton tries a shot downfield. Now, we can argue all we want. I'm sure a lot of Bears fans were like, you know, just go north and south, get the first down. I totally understand that. But sometimes maybe you can make a big play when that happens. So they go for a shot on third down. And typically when that happens, or when I play Madden, that means I know I'm going for it on fourth down. I already know what I'm doing. I'm a play ahead. They call a timeout on that. And then they come out, and then they do the wildcat, and it doesn't work. The second timeout, I believe, was a third and six or fourth and six or something like that. They didn't get lined up right. Whatever. It kind of is what it is on that second one. But then that third one, Corey, they score a go-ahead touchdown, and they don't know the math that is necessary in a game of that situation. We're going up four or five doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
You got to get up by at least six. They bring the punt. They bring the kicking team out for a PAT, and they have to burn their final time out because they have to go for two.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to get your perspective on it, but it's pretty obvious, right? I mean, like, when you're a head coach, don't you have to be some of the smartest people on the field, four, five, six plays ahead? You can't blame it on the headset, man. This is just why he won't be coach the Bears anymore, right?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. You have to know that situation, and you have to have a right hand man in your pocket to be able to fill you in on everything. Like, every coach has that person that just kind of keeps them reminded of certain things, gives them hey, this is the situation.
Just
so you know, if you score here, this is what we should do. This is what we say we should do. Boom. So that way you know you're ahead of the curve. And it just seemed like there's so many game time decisions that happen on the fly. And it's on Matt Nagy for sure. But obviously he doesn't have that right-hand man that's in his ear keeping him at tabs with everything. And I think every good coach has that to some extent.
And if I may, really quick, typically do you know, is it kind of like to each their own, or is that typically like a special teams guy, or in your past experience?
So, I know a lot of times Lovey and Dave Tobe, who's now on Kansas City, they were always in each other's ear. And I feel like for, you know, when Lovey and the offensive staff, that was kind of the offensive staff did it. And Lovey and Dave Tobe, you know, was kind of defense and special teams. So they were really in sync with each other. And I think it's just every coaching staff has to know, okay, who am I closer to? Who do I feed off? Who am I talking with about certain situations that may come up? And especially with a special teams coach, Chris Tabor, you know, who worked with Dave Tobe as well. And he's a guy that's really good in this league, Tabor. Him and Nagy should have been talking with each other. Okay, if this is the situation, if we score here, this is what we should do. And so that way you don't have to burn a timeout in the situation where, you know, you need that timeout late at a later date.
It's the second week in a row where we've had the ball at the 50-yard line with a couple seconds left to go. And in theory, if you had one of those timeouts, you win the game, but it gives you that chance. You could play a middle of the field at that point, right?
Yeah, and then possibly try to kick a game-winning or game-tying field goal. In that situation. But, yeah, I mean, I think the writing's on the wall. I mean, you know it. I know it. I just think the way the Bears do things, they don't ever fire anybody during the season. You know, I think that's kind of been their basis. Like, we're going to wait till the season's over, then we'll make our decisions. You know, I don't think they like any of the chaos that comes with it. And but I think everyone knows that Matt Nagy's most likely not going to be here next year.
Yeah, and I like to encourage empathy to everyone in this life. Try and put yourself in the shoes of what a person's going through. I don't think Matt Nagy is as bad of a coach as he has been the past month. He just kind of looks like the guy, again, I love doing baseball analogies, who at one point had a nice hot streak, or maybe was viewed as a talented head coach and a really good person. He just looks like he's in like a 2-for-34 slump right now. And his strike zone is the size of like North America. And he's swinging like Javi Baez right now, because if anything, it's going in the wrong direction. This is coming off a bye week. And Corey, we're sitting here talking about why our coach isn't 1-2 steps ahead on knowing what to do in these game time decisions and what to do. You know, we're talking about in our offense right here, how do we make adjustments? And we look on the other side of the field, and the Baltimore Ravens, you know, the backup quarterback obviously comes in, so you sort of know what they're doing. I also kind of felt, too, that they didn't really take any of your advice, where if you're going to play the Ravens and a backup quarterback, I don't know, maybe get more than 14 carries for David Montgomery. Like, the Ravens just looked like they knew what they were doing. We're going to run it. We're going to run it again, and then we're going to try and hit Andrews a couple of times and see what we can do with Bateman and maybe play him off Vildor. The Bears, after that first drive, kind of went all over the place. Now, Justin Fields, I felt like, was a little inaccurate, but it just kind of started really leaning towards the passing game when really maybe we just needed to eat some more of this clock and maybe not give the Ravens so many opportunities.
Yeah, Joe, it's very disheartening, because you look at the Baltimore Ravens, right? Without Lamar Jackson, without Marquise Brown, that's like 85% of their offense, right? It's gone. Mm-hmm. And we cannot even win a game like that against a backup. And the thing is, if we would have just started from the beginning and contained him, you know, there were so many different scramble plays where, you know, early on, as the game went on, they kept him in the pocket better. But early on, I'm like, come on, you have to have contain. You have to work on the same page. If a defensive end goes inside, the tackle has to cover him. If you have a guy coming off the edge, you have to set this other edge. That's how it works together. That's how you get sacks. Like, the Bears honestly should have had 10 sacks in this game easy, you know, if they would have just stayed at home. And that's a situation where everything was in their favor. Like I talked about, you know, 85% of the offense is not in there, you know, and you can't get a W, and you can't contain, you know, this backup quarterback. And we couldn't put points on the board either. And that's the problem. You know, Baltimore defense, you know, they were good at pressuring. They were number one in pressures, but I feel like we could have really exploited them, you know, if we would have done some more RPOs early on. And you got to work with the strengths, because what I saw was, when Andy Dalton came in, it just seemed like the play calling was a little bit different, right? You know, that first play was a fake run, you know, counter scheme. And then all of a sudden,
green pass back, the second one. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was pretty crazy to see, you know, just the play calling. You know, it's like they were exploiting different matchups. And I don't know if that's maybe they feel more comfortable with Andy Dalton or whatnot, but it just seemed like the play calling was a little bit better. Like, you look at, you know, the pass to Darnell Mooney, right? He should have been caught, you know, 20-yard gain or whatever. He made it do what it do, and he went for 60. But the Marquise Goodwin one, that was great. You know, you're seeing that you have single coverage, you got Olympic track runner out there, he let him go on that 4th and 11. So it just seemed like they were exploiting matchups a little bit differently. And early on, it just seemed like we were just going through the motions almost with the offense. And I'm like, Justin Fields was coming off one of his best performances. Come on, let's go.
Rip it.
We're at home. There's no crowd noise. We have nothing to worry about. Let's go. And it just seemed like he had, was he 4 of 11? I think something like that. Like, you know, come on. We have to do a better job of putting him in a position to succeed. You look at the Ravens, right? They have a backup quarterback in there, and the backup quarterback is outperforming Justin Fields, right? Is he more talented than him? No. But you got to put him in a position to succeed. And that's what the Ravens did for their backup. Why can't we do that with our starter? That's the only thing I'm trying to figure out. You know, it just seemed like the play calling was different when Andy Dalton came in. And, you know, you have to go back to the basics with Justin Fields, and you have to do what he's comfortable with, right? Some of those boots, some of those hard play action looks, right? Allow him to use his feet. Right. And
they put that in the first drive. Cause remember, I think one of the first plays was he rolled out and I think he picked up 9, 10, 11 yards on the first play. But after that first drive, it's like, they're kind of like feeling in the dark a little bit. It's so crazy. And you brought it up. They had about what, maybe 10, 12 hours. The Ravens did to game plan up a thing for Tyler Huntley to make him as comfortable and successful as possible. And they figured out how to do that. The Bears were coming off a bye week. Matt Nagy is no longer the offensive coordinator. He's supposed to be free and unfettered to figure out whatever it is that he needs to do to help this team win. And again, you're hitting it on the head. They look just as unprepared after those first couple drives as a team that's rolling their back about their last second.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, like I always say this, coaches get too cute with stuff. Like, listen, if you have a player like Justin Fields, right? He's such a threat running the ball, right? That's what separates him from anybody, right? When he can get going in the running game, that gives him confidence, right? It's not the other way around. You don't start out with passes and say, oh yeah, let's run the ball. You get him going with the running game, right? And you give the illusions, you give him options, both of it, like on the boots, you know, you give him design runs where you can get his confidence up. And then you have some quick passes, right, to Cole Kmet across the zone beaters, things like that. You know, then you get Darnell Mooney going. That's how you get him comfortable. And I just don't understand why we're like, okay, we have to do this and this. No, you do what he does well. And that makes it tough for the defense. The defense is worried more about him running than anything, right? So you put the pressure on them, right? Even if it doesn't work early on, you keep them honest, right? And then they're always worrying about this. And it opens up stuff. It opens up the screens, opens up the draws, opens up the running game with David Montgomery. And I think people sleep on that, like, you know, because they're always trying to, okay, let's do this passing play. Let's do that. Do what Justin Fields is comfortable with. Do what he likes, right? That's what every good coach does, right? Why do you think Mac Jones is doing so well? Because they're catering that offense for him. You know, early on, he kind of had a little struggles and they kind of fine-tuned everything. You know, there's a difference why there's some quarterbacks doing really well, and especially young quarterbacks, and others that are struggling. And it's not because they're not talented, this, that, and the other. It's because they're not putting them in enough positions to succeed. And I think that's the problem with the Bears. You know, it's always in the second half, usually, that, you know, Justin Fields in the first half is, in the second half, he really goes off on the good games he's had. It's because they make some adjustments, like, okay, let's do this and let's go back to what he's comfortable with. But early on, it's like, we're trying to feel everything out. No, put the pressure on them, right? Tell them, hey, first read, second read, tuck it and go. You know, and this week, what I saw is when he tucked it and went, he was like a second late than he normally was in that Pittsburgh game. When the Pittsburgh game, and then tucks it and go. Because that second is just buying the rush more time. And that's why he wasn't able to have some of those 10 to 15, 20 yard scrambles that we saw in the Pittsburgh game or some of the earlier on games. So you just got to keep it simple for him and allow him to run. That's what gives him the confidence. That's like Lamar Jackson. When he's really rocking, you know, he's working those RPOs, and then that gives him the confidence for the pass, you know? So I think Justin Fields is a better passer than a guy like Lamar Jackson. No disrespect to him, you know, but his arm strength, if he can make every throw, he just needs to be confident, you know? And I think the Bears just fail to put him in those positions to succeed. And it sucks because I feel like now people say, well, Andy Dalton's better. Oh, no. You know, we got to play him. And then there becomes that whole thing. And I think that's what really people are saying. But this season, you know, in my eyes, we're not going to the playoffs, you know, unless a miracle happens, a Christmas miracle. I think now you got to go with the young kid, and you have to get him confidence. And I'm not talking about you just put him out there and you call the plays that you want to. You call the plays that are good for him, and we're going to get him confidence. Because it's almost like this. You really have to keep his psyche in a good spot. You know, you have to keep him comfortable in there. You know, and if they can do that, you know, and he continues to progress, because on Sunday he went down, you know, Pittsburgh game, he was going up. I think everybody had recognized that around the league, all the top analysts, people around the league, they knew who Justin Fields was. And then after this past game, they're like, oh, well, you know, maybe he's not what we thought he is, but he can be. He can be. And I think the Bears is.
Again, we keep saying it, though. Week to week, it's just not going to be like sunshine and roses with this guy all the time. And it's a really good insight on your part that, you know, maybe the bye week came at maybe the not most opportune time for a guy like Justin Fields because, yeah, maybe he did look. We've been talking about a lot. You know, if he is that 0.2, 0.3 seconds slow in the NFL, that can kind of swallow you up a little bit. So, you know, the fact that he isn't going to have, you know, again, some bad moments and some bad games, and we'll never know. Obviously, he left the game with a ribs injury, so we'll never know if he had a great second half the way he did against Pittsburgh and against San Francisco and got warmed up as the game went on. We'll never really know. But to say that Andy Dalton – now, look, like, maybe Andy Dalton understands Matt Nagy's offense a little bit better. Okay, I can play that game. But guess what? We won't be running next year. Matt Nagy's offense. And you're hitting on something that's really important where I think the thing that NFL and Bears fans get lost, and I get lost in it, and I'm learning this too as well, is I think we get so enamored with where's this guy coming from? What kind of – where? What offense is he coming from? And you know what, man? I don't even want that anymore. I want a guy that can adjust. You talk about the Patriots, right? Last year they ran a unit with Cam Newton. This year they're running it with Mac Jones. And they're the same guys calling the same type of plays, but they're adjusting it to cater to the strengths that are on their team. They're utilizing the skills that they have in front of them and trying to make it happen. How does Khalil Herbert not get involved in yesterday's game? I'm kind of asking that question. How does Cole Kmet only have one target through the first half of the game, and I think through better part of the entire game until towards the very end? Those are questions that I'm going to continue to ask, and I would like to think it's because the system. And I don't think Matt Nagy knows how to run any other kinds of systems. So when we're going to be looking at a new coach moving forward, I mean, I just want someone that's going to be willing to adjust. And not just to the players on the team, but to the type of game that's going to have. Like, we're not going to run the same playbook if it's 20 degrees under, you know, 20 degrees below zero and it's snowing outside. We're going to run a different game. We're not going to run the same game if we're playing against Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. We're not going to run the same game. You know, and that's the kind of stuff that I'm really kind of looking towards. Yeah. And in terms of Andy Dalton, I mean, you know, good for him. You know, the Darnell Mooney play, that's all Darnell Mooney, right? He got it into a playmaker's hands. Playmakers make plays. That was a great job. Couple nice throws. I thought a good throw to Cole Kmet here and there. I thought most part he looked just as rusty coming off the bench. If anything, he skipped the ball to Darnell Mooney at one point where we kind of needed it. He overthrew a couple guys a little high to Marquise Goodwin at one point, and then he hits a wide open Goodwin down the field. So let me ask you, let's just start the question that everyone's going to be thinking about. Would you start Justin Fields on Thursday with sore ribs, or would you sit the rookie, try and get him to heal up, and bring in Andy Dalton for a Thanksgiving game against Detroit?
Yeah, so I think it depends how banged up his ribs are. You know, I think, you know, because you just want to be cognizant of that he's a younger guy. You don't want him to have a nagging hip injury or rib injury the rest of the year. I think if he's pretty close to 100%, you know, you put that rib cage on and you send him out there, because I think what he needs is experience right now. That's the biggest thing. And he played well against the Lions the last time. So I think this could be a confidence building game. You know, they're really struggling right now. Their locker room is kind of lost. They're not really buying into their coach, it seems like, right now. Jared Goff might not even play. It seems like he's coming back at an undisclosed date. So
oblique.
You know, take that as you may.
Corey.
You know,
tricky, Corey.
I know. I think in his opinion, he's like, you know, the coach called me out. You know, he's saying this about me. I'm not rushing back for this. You know.
Well, he hasn't thrown a passing touchdown in over 5 weeks.
Yeah,
Jared Goff. So
exactly
when that happens.
Who do you think got the better end of that deal?
Oh my God. Detroit's like, yeah, we'll take the money. We'll take Goff's contract.
But yeah, I think if Justin Fields, he feels, you know, close to 100%, I think you play him just because he needs that experience. And I think this week, you know, just start with the running game, you know, with Justin Fields and David Montgomery. Get Khalil Herbert involved too. There's no reason we can't have a 1-2 punch at running back. You know, there's no reason why in this day and age we cannot have a 1-2 punch. It seems like every team has that 1-2 punch at running back. So why not? You know, I think, you know, when I look at this past game, 20 rushing attempts, that's too low. You know, I think we need to get at least 30, you know, if not more.
Yeah, and can I ask you a question? And maybe this is going to be based on what you've seen from the two players, because I see them run David Montgomery out either into the slot, or they'll run him on formation every once in a while. Mm-hmm. Is it so crazy? Am I ahead of my skis? Why aren't we playing games with Herbert and Monty on the field at the same time? Why aren't we doing RPOs? Why aren't we trying to maybe do a reverse screen where you have to pick if it's going to be Herbert or Montgomery? Yeah. Why aren't we putting Montgomery, maybe sliding him over to the slot instead of like a Damier Bird, who, let's be honest, hasn't played a lot this season? Yeah. Am I onto something, or am I kind of like thinking a little bit more too fantasy football Madden-esque? Like, why aren't we doing that? Because Herbert has shown he's one of the most talented offensive players on our team.
Yeah, I think we should do some formations like that. You know, obviously not all the time, but I think it should be, you know, a different look we're showing. Yeah, exactly. Something different, you know, that kind of gets them confused, and it's something they have to key on. But I think there's enough pie to share for both of these guys. They're both talented. And I think it's a waste keeping Khalil Herbert on the bench. And you could make an argument that, hey, he was looking just as good as David Montgomery, you know, before David Montgomery got injured. So, you know, I think they're both talented. I think you have two really good running backs and a third and Damian Williams as well. But I think Herbert and Montgomery need to be sharing some carries. And it may be a thing where, you know, getting it from up top, hey, David Montgomery's our guy. You know, it's a big year for him. We want him to be, you know, a bear of the future. Let's give him the carries, you know, because it kind of seemed like, you know, early on they were kind of mixing and matching Montgomery and Williams. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, when Williams got hurt and Montgomery got hurt, it was all Herbert. And then, I don't know, it just seemed like for whatever reason, when David Montgomery came back, like, he's getting all the carries and that's it. And that's kind of what we're seeing. But, you know, like I said, you have two talented backs that get them both going. I mean, that's just another threat that you can have. And Montgomery could catch the ball out of the backfield as well. Maybe put him in the slot, like you said, have some crossing routes, different things he can do, different pick routes. Just have him out there as another body that they have to worry about.
Especially when I think we've seen at times, you know, teams trying to attack our tackle position. So if you're going to have these guys going like this, quick little flat out to Herbert or something like that. I'm just really curious, especially with no Allen Robinson. You know, just take what you have on the team. And I guess, again, I think we're kind of hammering on maybe a coaching staff, an offensive coaching staff, unwilling to make adjustments. So, Corey, this is the combo platter. We teased it. It's here.
Oh.
Get out your plate. Get out your napkin. And make sure you got your Pepcid ready, because we just did the post game of that awful, awful, awful Ravens loss. But look, we have to look forward to a Detroit Lions game coming up here on Thursday, Thanksgiving morning. Two teams, Corey, over the last six weeks are 0-10-1 combined. Get ready for the marquee matchup that every Thanksgivinger deserves while they're trying to not overcook their yams in the morning. and it could be Boyle versus Dalton. Let's see, baby. But let's just kind of preview. Let's look forward. The Bears loses five in a row. Let's be honest. If they lose to the Lions, I just, for the life of me, I can't figure out how we don't fire the head coach. You know, I could be wrong on that front. But yeah, as you look at this matchup, you know, what are you looking at right now? What do you think are going to be some of the major keys to breaking this losing streak, getting back in the win column, and picking up a win here, and hopefully preparing to start a new winning streak against Arizona the following week?
Man, is my key every week, and sometimes they do it, sometimes they don't.
Didn't do it last week.
Get the running game going, right? We need it. We need at least 30 plus carries. You know, that's a minimum. You know, I would like to see 35. I like the old school grind them out games, especially with the way the offense has been up and down. I think it just takes pressure off of whoever's out there at quarterback, whether it's Justin Fields or Andy Dalton. You know, you have two beasts at running back in Montgomery and Herbert. You know, utilize them, right? We have Cole Kmet, there's a great blocking tight end, Jimmy Graham that can block as well. Jason Peters, the rest of the old line, they're really good at run blocking. Let's use that, right? And it just sets everything else up. So I don't want to see a game where we try to get too cute with this, that, and the other. Because in this league, it doesn't matter how you win or how it looks, you know, as long as you get the W. And I think, you know, cold weather football, obviously, you know, we're playing in Detroit, doesn't matter about that. But you know, in this stretch of games coming up, we're going to have to run the football well, especially as it gets colder. Mm-hmm. That's what you're going to have to do. You're going to be able to pass the ball as well, but it really starts with establishing your will in the run game. That's how you wear teams down, and that's how you win games in the fourth quarter. And I feel like if we could have had a better running game, some of these games this season, I think, you know, we could have possibly won these games and been able to take the pressure off whatever quarterback was in there. You know, there's a direct correlation in the teams that are doing well that get the running game going and teams that don't. That's why Kansas City was struggling so much early on. Even Patrick Mahomes, one of the best quarterbacks in the league, if you can't get that running game going and you put too much pressure on him, it, you know, there's not too many quarterbacks that can maintain that, you know, even Patty Mack. So I think, you know, the running game is crucial, and it's something that sometimes we get away from in the game. We're trying to be too cute and showcase we can do this, that, and the other. Run the football. You know, when you're averaging 4 to 5 yards a pop, I mean, I don't know what to tell. Like, teams would love that. So we can do that. We just have to be consistent with it.
And another thing that does on top of it is if you're undermanned defensively, you don't have a Hicks, a Jackson, and a Mack, you can control how much you expose your defense to the opponent by trying to run the football and limit, shave down that clock a little bit. You know, we talk a lot about time of possession being some sort of, you know, measure of success, but also it can kind of limit the success of the other side. And I'm not saying I'm afraid of Detroit's offense, but the more that we can run the ball, the more we can just kind of control the tenor of the game a little bit. And it is a shame, too, where I really do, you know, we'll see what happens with Justin Fields. If he doesn't play on Thursday because of ribs, I'm not going to be upset because I want to protect him. And clearly the fact that he didn't come back in the game was a signal to me that he's probably banged up pretty good. But this is a perfect matchup for him, right, where we can run the ball. And the Detroit Lions secondary has been very, very poor all season long. This is really catered to that Justin Fields, you know, attacking 20 to 25 yards down the field plus, and to have that kind of come together could be a really great moment for him to have a bounce back performance if he can get out there. And, you know, Andy Dalton, too, as well, I think, could maybe have some success as well. But again, it would be that perfect matchup with that running game and then maybe trying to attack them downfield.
Yeah, I would like that too. And you know, I think we just have to exploit this. Like, they are a wounded team right now, right? Like, everything is just going downhill for them. You know, they're winless. They have a tie. That's what they're excited about, I mean, at this point. But you know, you have to get a win here. We've been struggling, and it's also like you said, these two struggling teams. And what we need more than anything is just a win. Because this gives you confidence. It doesn't matter if it's against the Lions or whoever. It's an NFL team. It's a team you're playing, and you need to buy a win on Thanksgiving. You know, eat some good turkey afterwards. But this is a must-win game, you know, honestly. And I know the Bears usually don't fire coaches, you know, during the season. But I think if they lost this game, that would be grounds to fire a coach. If any team out there, like, just how Detroit is struggling, especially if we lost to a backup quarterback and Tim Boyle. I'm sorry. That's grounds to get fired, you know, in my opinion, just with the losing streak and then giving Detroit their first win of the season. That's just a no-no. So, you know, I'm just hoping we can get that going. And I think the next key is, you know, I think Boyle's going to be playing. So heat him up, you know, whether he's in there or Jared Goff, we got to get the pressure on him. You know, I think we did a great job last game. You know, Robert Quinn had a great game, Gibson, Goldman. We had a lot more pressures and sacks that we had in the weeks prior. But I think we really need to heat him up this week, especially if there's that young quarterback out there. You know, really take him off of his game, right? Stop the run. That's first and foremost, because, you know, they're going to really try to get the running game going. So stop that run. And that's something that we struggled with all year. I think it's because of gap discipline. Guys getting outside of their gaps, you know, not closing down, you know, and some of these zone reads, you know, not staying at home, contain issues. It starts with gap discipline. So every man has a gap and a job. You follow that. You don't try to do the job of somebody else. And that's how you hold each other accountable. It's something we haven't seen on. But if we can stop that run and really get after the quarterback, then we can cause turnovers, you know, sacks, fumbles, et cetera. I think that's what it starts with, the pressure. Robert Quinn has looked great. I think he's going to have another big game this week, but it starts with stopping the run. Then we can pin our ears back.
Yeah, I'm with you because, you know, maybe for some Bears fans, you look at the last game we played against the Lions, you know, Khalif Raymond gave us a hard time with a couple touchdowns late there. I'm not concerned about that at all. DeAndre Swift is the lone and only bright spot for that offense. I think TJ Hockenson has Pro Bowl level talent, but they just can't really seem to get him the ball no matter who's in the quarterback position. But DeAndre Swift, I think he had 136 rushing yards against the Browns. You know, I mean, he's going to get the ball, and he's a two-way guy too as well, Bears fans. So you can get him out in the flat, and all of a sudden we're going to have linebackers chasing him down there. It's really a guy that we just need to shut down, and I think the rest is going to take care of itself. Another one too is, We've been talking about it a lot, and I think this is going to be one key, and we actually did see it in this game, which I thought was kind of nice, was when you've got that great front seven pressure, Corey, you've been talking about all season long, you got to make a play. Capitalize it. I want to see a play from our secondary. I don't care who's out there. I don't care the name on the back of the jersey. I'm just saying if we're going to get that kind of pressure that we just saw against the Ravens, you gotta go out there. You gotta try and make a play. You gotta cash in, all right? They're obviously being flustered. You know, the offense, the opponent's offense is thinking about things in a different way because their clock is going a little bit faster. But against this Detroit Lions team, I think the quickest way also to maybe take some of their soul away from them a little bit, take the air out of their sails, is just one of those moments. Maybe it's a pass or something, or just make a play secondary. I don't know how many interceptions we have as a team this season, but I guarantee you, it's not enough. That's definitely going to be one of my big keys too, as well. I'm looking at you, like Jalen Johnson, hell, Kendall Vildor, man, giving you a hard time. Things got even worse since we were giving you a hard time on the pod, man. Come on, man, you can have a good performance. You can have a bounce back. You got to keep grinding. Got to keep fighting, even after a game like this. You know, I think winning the turnover battle is going to be huge just in this game, because I just don't think the Detroit Lions can overcome losing the turnover battle in any NFL game right now.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. And for me, you know, my final key is discipline, right? That's something that we haven't seen much of this
year. Across the board.
Across the board, you know, from offense, defense, special teams, no offsides penalties, no delay of games, no blown coverages.
No Jason Peters. No Jason Peters false start on a 3rd and 6. Oh, you're trying to – I mean,
exactly.
He didn't do it the whole game, but, man, again – bad teams do bad things at the worst moments, and that was one.
Exactly. So being disciplined, that's something that's plagued us all year, and I think that's why we've had such issues in the run game defensively, is because of that. You know, pressure has been sporadic at times, been great and bad. I think that's lack of contain a lot of times as well, and not being on the same page. If somebody's taking an inside move, covering him on the outside, you have to work together. You have to communicate, and I think that's the problem. On all levels, from the front seven to the back end, they're not communicating with each other. And that was apparent with the Rashad Bateman play down the sideline, right, where he almost scored in there, wide open. Lack of communication. That's an easy play. He didn't run anything fancy. That's something that should have been defended. And you have a chance to bow up, hold him to a field goal, and win the game by one, and we can't even do that. So it comes down to discipline. That's the key this week. That's why I want to see a disciplined ball club. And especially against a struggling Detroit team, we have to be disciplined.
Not what you would like to see more, but what you think is more likely to happen on Thursday. Darnell Mooney over 100 receiving yards or David Montgomery over 100 rushing yards? More likely.
I think Mooney for sure over 100. I just think with the way that we're running the ball right now, the past two games, this hasn't seemed like we're making a concerted effort to really get it going. You know, I think they like what they're seeing from Mooney. I think they're trying to get Justin Fields or Andy, whoever's in there, passing the ball a little bit more. But I think the running game sets up everything. So in my world, in your world, I think David Montgomery going over 100 would be a lot more beneficial for the team than Darnell Mooney going over 100. So if we can get that running game going, I would love it. But I think it's more realistic this week that Darnell Mooney is going to go over 100, because I think he's confident. His route running is on a different level. He's one of the most underrated route runners, in my opinion, in the league at wide receiver. He's a rising star. I mean, he was an absolute steal in the 5th round. He gets open, you know.
Yeah.
They used to call Chris Hogan 7-11. I mean, Darnell Mooney is 7-11 times two. I mean, that dude gets open. And it's so good to see him really have his coming out party. And, you know, I don't know. Maybe is that why Allen Robinson wasn't playing this week? I don't know. Maybe is he, you know, we're in a situation where, you know, is Allen Robinson maybe a little disappointed not getting the ball as much? We don't know, man. You know, it's just.
Well, wait, can I just counter with that? Isn't the hope a little bit of when an injury pops up late in the week and, you know, you got a quick turnaround for a Thursday? Wouldn't they just say to themselves, hey, we're going to sit you for this one because we feel good about you coming back for Thursday, as opposed to you playing maybe aggravating it, and then we lose you for that one and the next one. Is that also a fair thing to say?
Possibly, but when did he injure his hamstring? Was it during the bye week? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. He popped up. He popped up suddenly on like a Thursday, and it was a DNP Thursday, Friday with a hamstring. Yeah. Was not on the designation the week before that, and
that's what I'm saying. It just seems a little fishy. It could be very fair, and it could be an injury happened in practice on Wednesday. But what I'm saying is sometimes things in this league, you know, if people don't get the ball the way they want to in certain things, they're like, well, why am I going to rush back if something's not feeling this way or whatnot? So I don't know. Maybe I'm speculating for sure. I'm definitely speculating on that. But I don't know. It definitely seems like maybe Allen Robinson is a little disappointed with some of the reactions during some of the games early on in the season when he wasn't getting the ball, et cetera. So.
Look, and it's fair to ask, and I think it's also fair to say that I think we're talking a little bit less about the player and more about the situation, right? And the people that are running this unit out there right now that is now 3-7, and you know we looked at that pregame schedule and we were like, oh man, that there's a 5-game stretch that looks pretty daunting. The Bears are going to have a hard time. Well, guess what? They lost all 5. Right. And Eddie Jackson did the same thing, came back as a limited participant this week in practice, did not suit up on Sunday. Now, is that a knock on Eddie Jackson? Probably not. But at the same time, I guarantee you, if we had won those last 3 games that we had leads in the fourth quarter, we're 6-4. You know, maybe we're talking about an Eddie Jackson playing yesterday. Maybe we're talking about an Allen Robinson playing yesterday. And that is a very, very fair thing to consider for sure.
Exactly. Remember, I told you, you know, in this league, people make business decisions based on how your team is doing. And that's very real. That's not a knock on any players. But, you know, their job is to maximize their career, right? Because this isn't forever. It's not for long, NFL. So they have to think about long term. So sometimes if you have something nagging you and you're like, hey, you know, Eddie Jackson, you know, had an ACL injury before, I think, in college. Allen Robinson had an ACL injury. So, you know, if you're not 100% in something and you don't think, you know, you can give your best, or you think you may be susceptible to another injury, you know, in the situation that it is now, sometimes they're like, hey, let me rest another week. You know, let me take some time off. And that's what becomes a situation. How your team is doing is kind of how you cater everything on your game and how you're feeling to if you're playing or not.
And I often think that, and I want to believe this, that as a fan, I underestimate how hurt people are when they actually do suit up and play, right? I mean, have there been times in your career, because we're talking about it now, have there been times in your career where you probably have suited up to play in a game that honestly, more or less, you should not have been in, but the Bears were either winning or you had an opportunity and you wanted to keep your spot, and you probably brought yourself out there and maybe probably shouldn't have done that, but you did it because the situation was lending itself towards that, as opposed to right now where the season's sliding the other way and they really don't have that incentive to maybe, you know, go out there and, you know, pain med it up and just, you know, we'll see what happens Monday morning. That ever happened to you?
Oh yeah. So before the 2012 season, that was a big season for me, because my first year, 2010, I played the second half of the season, did really well as a rotation guy, played special teams. Then my second year, I tore my meniscus, didn't really play much the whole season. So going into the 2012 season, it was a big season for me, because they're like, hey, you need to really prove yourself, because, you know, you really haven't done much, you know, in these past 2 years. We need to see more from you. And I remember that training camp, my Achilles was killing me every day. And I thought, I was like, I'm going to pop my Achilles. And I was like, I cannot miss time. I was like, I can't miss these reps. I'm doing really well. Like, if it goes, it goes. Like, I got to give my all, because, you know, I'm trying to prove myself to make this roster spot, you know, be a rotational guy in there, be a guy that competes. So the whole training camp, man, I every day I was like, is this going to be the day my Achilles went? I really thought so. It hurt so bad every day, felt a pull on it. But I was like, I'm just willing myself to get through this training camp. And, you know, once the training camp ended, you know, and I did well and I made the team, it was in the rotation, we got like a week to rest. And then that was just what did it. And after that, I was good, you know. And then in 2013, in training camp, I found out I had a torn labrum in my hip, and it was killing me. And I was like, you know, this is a big year for me, a contract year. I can't sit out. So I was like, I gotta play through this. I'll get it taken care of after the season or whatever. So You know, I played the season, and, you know, that's when Henry Melton tore his ACL. Steven Paya, you know, was he got hurt as well. And then we had Nate Collins was a rotational defensive tackle. He tore his ACL as well. So I had to, you know, move in my contract year from end to tackle. But, you know, at the time it was a good thing because it kind of showed my versatility. But, man, that hip was hurting all season, you know, at movements, everything. But, you know, you just have to get through it, you know, take 3 ibuprofens, 4 ibuprofens, 2 Tylenols to the game just to get you through. You know, it's what you have to do. And I think every player has been in a situation, you know, to be in that, you know, where you have to gut it through because you either haven't proved yourself or you want to win a game or, you know, it's what we do as players. And, you know, I think that the biggest thing is once you get to a certain status that you can take off if you're not feeling that great, you know, in this day and age, you know, it's a different ball game now than 10, 20 years ago, where even the top players like, I'm going
to
gut it out.
You just go to the signing bonus list and you just go, yeah. The signing bonus list lets you know what's up.
Exactly. So that's the biggest thing now is like guys are, you know, they kind of have, you know, those vet days sometimes, you know, where like the NBA has, you know, like LeBron, if he's not feeling it, you know, he's banged up a little bit, he'll sit out. You know, football players used to never do that, you know, unless it was like they couldn't walk. That's just what's the name of the game. How tough are you? You know, you take your Toradol shot, you tough it out, you're struggling the next week, you take your Toradol shot again, and you keep it moving. I mean, that was the mantra of NFL players. And, you know, I think a lot of guys are still like that, but it's getting better. And I like that because I think so many guys were playing through so many things that were awful and they're wearing down their knee cartilage or their backs or their hips or shoulders. And then they're, you know, have an early hip replacement or early knee replacement. So you know, I think
why do you think Khalil Mack's having foot surgery, man?
Yeah. Exactly.
That's not a new injury, dude. Like
exactly. Like at the end of the day, part of the reason why I retired was I got to a point where my body just was not feeling good. And I'm like, I just had my daughter and I'm like, listen, there's more to life than football. I love football. It was everything to me. But just thinking about like, okay, what if one day I'm not able to play, run around with my daughter and do this and be active and do the things I want to do. And that scared the crap out of me. And I think now players are realizing that. And that's why you see guys aren't playing as long. You know, there's some people that, you know, still play 15, 20 years. You know, it's the rare. But you know, I think most guys now are, you know, getting to their second contract, playing it out and being like, how do I feel? I'll call it quits. And that's what guys are trying to do. They're trying to like, hey, I'm not going to live and die on the football field. I'm not getting dragged off here. Right. I'm going to go out on my own terms. And I think that's what people are realizing. You know, there's a lot more to life than football, you know, even though it's blessed us with so many different opportunities. It's almost like the beginning of our life, you know, because most guys retire at before they're 30 years old.
Hey, I was right? gonna say, he's 32. He's ancient.
Exactly. Right. So it kind of sounds
an old man. Now. How old is Danny Trevathan? Like 32, 33. And they're like, old man Trevathan out there. It's like, what?
Exactly. But I think people are realizing that, you know, quality of life is a big thing. And I like that people are starting to recognize that because listen, you know, when you're done with football, nobody cares about you, to be honest. You know, that's just how it is. Like when you're done there, you know, they may remember who you were as a player, this, that, and the other, but you know, as a person, this, that, and the other, most people don't care, you know? So you have to take care of yourself, whether it's mentally, you know, physically, financially. And that's what I hope fans can realize when they see a guy retire in his prime, you know, that there was a decision there that was made for whatever reason, whether it was
that's the Calvin Johnson theory, right? Everyone likes to say that he retired because the Lions suck and he wouldn't trade him. I mean,
Barry Sanders too.
Yeah, and in the past years, Calvin Johnson has just said that, you know, everything was trending in the wrong direction. And to bring it back to the Bears just for a second, I know every Bears fan wishes Allen Robinson and Eddie Jackson would gut it out and get out there for the team. But again, you're 3-7. And if you are a real Bears fan, I don't think we want to see either of those guys tear a hamstring. Because if you tear a hamstring, hamstring surgery sucks. Let me just like, you know what I mean? And it's hard to come back from and they can be really tricky and you can injure them again and stuff. So you have to be really careful, you know. It's like a, you know, what kind of chips are you putting in the middle of the table and why are you putting them in the middle of the table at this time? If you're 3-7, then maybe all of a sudden some of these guys aren't going to suit up, you know, and that's just kind of the reality.
Yeah. I mean, that's the reality in this league. And, you know, as you see it, the teams that are struggling, the established veterans, you know, if they're not feeling good, hey, it's vet day. You know, sometimes they put them on IR for things that shouldn't, you know, because they realize, like, listen, it's not even worth it at this point. You know, this season's a wash, and let's think about next year. And I think that's why Khalil Mack got the surgery when he did. You know, I think they were like, hey, if we were making a run, maybe he could have gutted it out and played through it, but it's not even worth it at this point.
Yeah, and on the flip side, I almost feel like they did that with Larry Borum too, with the ankle injury after week one. They were like, you know what, man, you're a rookie, man. Like, we could try and work you back into the lineup, you know what I mean? But you have a lot to learn. We can't wait for you right now. So we're just going to toss you for three games and try and work with the Wilkerson and Nfeti thing and kind of go from there. Corey, man, it's time. Unless you got any more keys to a Bears victory against the Lions in week 12. I mean, what else could there possibly be other than just win, baby, for the love of God?
Yeah, right?
It's been 6 weeks, guys. So we're ready to roll, man. What is your final score? Do you think the Bears snap the schneid against the Lions on Thanksgiving?
Yes, I think they do snap the streak. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. I think 17-14, the Bears are going to win. It's going to be a close one. You know how it is, man. Detroit is always plays the Bears pretty tough at times. So I think they're going to be going back and forth. You know, I'm hoping there's a game-winning drive touchdown with Cole Kmet. You know, I think we really need to get him going. Jimmy Graham as well. I mean, Jimmy Graham's an older guy, but he's still productive out there. Andy Dalton targeted him. He looked good out there. So if we can get that tight end position really targeted, I think that would open everything up because those are the zone beaters. And you look at week in, week out, the teams that really do well. You look at last week with Baltimore, Mark Andrews, guys like that, Travis Kelce. You know, Cole Kmet can be a guy like Mark Andrews. They're very similar in build and athleticism. You know, they're aren't the straight burners, but they're big physical guys that can block and get across the middle, catch the ball, give you the first downs when you need to. So I see a lot of comparisons between him and Mark Andrews, you know. So if we can get that going, I feel really good about this game and that matchup. And like I said, 17-10, Bears win.
When you look at all the matchups and some of the stats, and then you kind of sort of measure up, you know, the offensive talent that the Bears do have on offense, you're saying to yourself, man, and they're coming off a 5-game losing streak. You know, they should be pissed off. You know, they just the jaws of victory have just been snatched away from them the last couple of times. They should win this game by 24 points. But I'm going with you on this one, Corey, because I just don't trust the overall collection of this team, whether it is if it's the players maybe, you know, failing to execute either on a busted coverage or a penalty, or it's the coaching staff, you know, not thinking three plays ahead and not putting them in the best position to succeed, which is honestly what they need so desperately right now. When a team is scuffling on the field, I don't trust them either. I'm going to say the Bears win because we might not have any more of these left this season, Corey. We got to do this, dude. I'm going 24-21, Bears win. I do think we can get after Tim Boyle. I do sort of feel like that there's going to be those moments where we're not going to understand why or whatever, but the Bears will score and the defense will just give it right back. And this one might get a little tight. And I could even see a scenario where I can see a scenario, man, where it is a little bit maybe of a 24-10 situation for most of the game. We're feeling pretty good about ourselves. And then all of a sudden the Lions score. A 3-and-out later, they got the ball back again, and we're all of a sudden now, you know what I mean, biting our fingernails. So that's possible. But, I'm hoping that they win just for the sake of all Bears fans out there so they can enjoy their holiday. For the Matt Nagy family so they can enjoy their holiday too as well, because I think we all see where this is heading. And I tell you, man, if they lose on Thursday – I don't know what happens next. And
I know, man.
And honestly, dude, I don't want to come on this pod and do the whole like scream about Matt Nagy needs to be fired. I don't want to do all that stuff if he doesn't get fired, or even if he, you know what I mean? I don't want to do that either. Like, I think there's a lot to still focus on with this season. Look, I'm with you. They're not going to the playoffs barring a 7-game winning streak or whatever that is. But I think we could still learn a lot about this team. And now it's just that thing of just thinking about who fits into next year? Who fits with Justin Fields? Is Sam Mustipha the center of the future? You know, do we have something with Larry Borum at right tackle? Dare I say, do we maybe even see Tevin Jenkins the last couple weeks of the season? Keep building the chemistry between Mooney and Kmet and Justin Fields. David Montgomery, Herbert, 1-2. You know, there's a lot to still watch for and improve upon. And I think I don't know if you've ever been a part of it, especially with Lovie Smith's teams, but you know what happens in the NFL. Sometimes a team sucks, and those last three or four games of the season, they maybe lock onto something. And for whatever reason, there's just that little weird momentum that kind of gets built into the offseason, and sometimes that can pay off for next year. And that's something that Bears fans need to continue to root for.
Yeah, I would love to see that. I'm just hoping we could stack some wins and just get better as a unit. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean a bunch of wins here or there. I just want to see more consistency, you know, offensively. I think discipline defensively, that's the biggest thing. That's what's hurt us all year. So I want to see going forward those two things, consistency offensively and discipline defensively, because that's what's been killing us all season.
Talk about stacking wins. We're going to have to talk about stacking Thanksgiving plate here in a second. We're going to get out of here on Believe in Bears with Joey Christopoulos and Corey Wooten. Today's episode is presented by BetOnline.ag, 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit, only when you use promo code BELIEV50, BLEAV50. Corey, man, take us home. Tell me what's going to be on the menu at the Wooten household. Do you cook? Do you not cook? And what are your favorite foods of choice coming up on?
Man, so we're going to Jersey to visit my family. So my mom and my aunt are cooking. So I think there's gonna be some short ribs, some ham, smoked turkey, mac and cheese, mashed potatoes, cornbread. Got to be the pies, you know, cherry pie, apple pie, and then some of the. Green bean casserole.
Yep. Is it a stuffing household at the Wooten house?
Yes. Stuffing. Yeah. So I'm excited for it. You know, I honestly haven't eaten meat in like 2 months, bro. To be honest with you, I think I might be saving it for this though. I've been going a little more pescatarian lately. You know, I've been feeling pretty good doing that. But you know, the short rib and ham and
I was gonna say, if you don't go back in full force, I respect you. But man, just like for me, just have like a little rib and a little smoked turkey because that sounds
What about you, man?
Hanging around my beautiful wife has family in town. We went to Steelers Chargers last night. So don't worry, Bears fans. There's other teams in the NFL that blow last drive leads. It's not uncommon to just our species. So we're going to be doing dinner around here. I will tell you, I'm a big like mac and cheese guy, big stuffing guy, big turkey dude. I've done a cornbread casserole where just, if you add a little bit of sour cream and some sweet corn and a little bit of regular corn and mix it and make the cornbread into it, it actually kind of turns into something that's a little rad. I like making that a whole lot.
Okay.
And then last year, my wife has a cousin, and she had they had all their family members over, and they made this cheese Mexican mole, and I tried it, and I put it on the turkey and mashed potatoes, and it blew my mind. So I don't know if that's gonna happen again, but like that's a little bit off the traditional path. But
yeah,
dude, I'm gonna eat like crazy. I'm gonna eat stupid.
Yeah, if I don't gain like 10 pounds, something's wrong, right?
darn! I only got to 7. Come on.
Yeah.
What happened to giving 100%?
Yeah, man. That sodium, man, puts a lot of weight on you, man. I weigh myself before and after. I'm like, dang, man. Then you wake up the next day, you're like, 10 pounds lighter from what you were the night before. You're like, man, that sodium is real, man.
Pulsing through my veins right now. Well, Corey, man, on behalf of myself, to your family, wish them a very happy Thanksgiving. Have a great trip, man. Have
you
a safe
too,
trip.
Too.
Yeah, thank you so much. And to all the Believe in Bears listeners, please have a happy holiday too as well. Thank you so much for checking out this pod. Thank you so much for checking out it on the new web style. I guess like Believe is now doing a whole new way of checking out Believe in Bears podcast. Whole new website, whole new way to find us. So we're going to be able to help you do that. So thank you so much. Corey, man, just take us home. Give the good people some good words before we watch, hopefully, Bears winning football in week 12.
Yeah, that's what we need, a Bears win. You know, Thanksgiving, we're going to eat a lot of food. You know, people will be drinking if that's your thing. Drink responsibly, but enjoy the game. Hopefully, we get a win that would just make Thanksgiving that much better. And hopefully, we'll have a lot to talk about on Monday, you know, breaking everything down. So looking forward to it. Appreciate your guys' support. Love doing this with you, Joey. So, bear down.
Yeah, great to see you, my friend. Have a great week, everyone. Have a great holiday. You will probably see us probably talking early next week with the holiday and stuff. We might enjoy ourselves just like everyone else enjoy themselves. So we'll hopefully get you a Bears post game early next week. Till then, be well, be safe. Please be good to each other. And remember, times are tough. We haven't won in 6 weeks, but bear down. we can bear down always and forever.